Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condover-Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
It's Mr. Ben Errington.
I said that like I needed a wee, but that's not true.
Regular co-host!
Just had a wee.
Just had a wee, haven't you? What, how would you rate the wee out of 10?
3 out of 10.
Oh.
It wasn't much to it. It wasn't one of those ones where you have been holding it in for ages. And you know, you just... It feels like you, if you arrived at the toilet like half a second later, it would have been bad. But you get there just in time, and it's like Indiana Jones
Are you the kind of person who wakes up in the morning dying for a pee, and they'll get up immediately, go and get back in bed, or you just leave it as long as you can, hold it in until the very last moment?
I don't wake up needing the pee normally, which not means in the middle maybe of... I've wet the bed at some point and not realised.
Sometimes I don't wake up needing to pee at all, and some idiots spill the drink everywhere.
I just sweat a lot around my middle.
Oh, well, a lot of information.
I get to the toilet, but I don't actually go to the toilet, if you know what I'm saying.
You secrete.
Yeah,
I see what you mean, mate. It's all coming out of you in sweat.
It's all coming out of you.
That's lovely.
Oh, shit.
You sound delightful.
Okay, so, how's it going? Are you flowing?
Yeah, fine. I'm flowing.
Good.
I'm feeling good. I don't need a wee yet. Maybe later. I've got like a giant
bladder
mug of coffee. It's huge. Look, it's so milky. I feel like that's going to piss through me, and then I'll piss. That's
gonna... Yeah, it's going to piss right through you and making you need a piss. So, I've got some horror news for you. It's not really horror news, but it sort of is. So, the Empire Magazine have changed their top 50 horror movies of all time list. They've updated it. I know.
How dare they? They're literally shitting on our doorstep here.
I know. So I've had a quick flick through. A cursory glance, I can't quite see what exactly they changed, but I can see that The Skin I Live In is now gone. It's been demoted.
Okay. One of the most popular episodes of ours on YouTube. I'd say popular, like it's been viewed a lot more than the other videos.
Yeah. But that's one of my favourite films as well, like from that list.
Yeah.
Maybe because it wasn't all-out horror. It is kind of, but okay. So that's gone. Hereditary is now in there at number 35. Shaun of the Dead is now 31. I'm sure that was way higher up the list than that before. I thought it was like 15 or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was.
A Quiet Place is in there at 24, which I'm a bit... I don't know if...
Behave yourself, Empire.
24.
Trying to please the big wigs.
Yeah, I feel like they're trying to please the audience there. Like they're playing to the crowd because that, I mean, okay, if you're going to put it in, that's fine. Put it in around 49, 50. But like 24, above Shaun of the Dead, above Hereditary, above loads of great films. I don't think so. Get Out was in last time, but now it's in at 19. And it was like 48 or something before.
Was it?
Yeah, it was quite, I'm pretty sure it was one of the first episodes we did.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, but I thought we did it because it came out of the cinema. I couldn't remember us doing it because it was in the list. Oh, well.
Really?
Well, I don't fully remember.
Yeah, I don't even. I thought we did it because the list would have been up. But it's at 19 now. Yeah, I think we've lost a few other films in there. The top 10, I think, is about the same. But it's just interesting to see.
Any It Chapter 1?
No. That was on there before, wasn't it? Was it? No.
No. It wasn't. That. I feel like, in terms of recent horror films, if you're going to put anything, I think It Chapter 1 has been. Because it's not just about how good a film it is, it's how good of a how big of a cultural impact it has as well. I think that has to be factored into it. Like, it's not the be-all and end-all, but I think
this version of Pennywise is punctured like the zeitgeist. Like, it's in everyone's mind. Everyone knows this version of Pennywise now, and it's like in all the other trailers. Like, all the other trailers for other films are like riffing on this film.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a completely different take on the character than what Tim Curry did, but
yeah,
I don't think they're in more the same realm.
Yeah,
a lot more eye work, but I don't think they're in the same realm as like a film as a whole. Taking those performances out of it, the films as a whole. Like, I've spoke to people about It, and people have gone, "Oh, I preferred the original."
I go
the original what? And they go the original film. I go, "Well, it was a miniseries."
Yeah,
but I think they're not in the same realm at all, because it's, you know, there isn't any gore or guts or anything. It's kind of just a very stripped down version of the story that gets a bit tedious after a while. So yeah, I think if you're going to include anything in terms of modern releases, I think It Chapter One would definitely trump A Quiet Place.
Yeah, I think so too. I think A Quiet Place is good. Like, it's very solid. I just kind of feel like it's I don't know. Maybe it's just me. It just hasn't impacted me quite as much as some of these other horror films.
It hasn't impacted me at all. Like, it's not a film that I feel like I want to go back to, or it's not a film like I discuss when I talk about recent horror films that have, you know, really done a number on me.
Yeah. But
maybe I'll go and give the list a little look and see how wrong they've got it.
Should do our own.
All right, guys, I'll do this list for you.
Okay, have you watched anything good this past week?
Have I watched anything good this past week? I have watched. I rewatched Hereditary.
Cool.
I watched it with someone who hadn't seen it before, so I got to see the instant reactions to some of the best moments in that film, like firsthand.
Yeah.
You know, even when I saw that things were coming, I kind of just had one eye on this person just to see. Hey, oh no, like that. And I think it's even more effective than when I watched it in the cinema, because when I watched it in the cinema, like, the people I watched it with, people are laughing at stuff, and like there was a general confusion amongst the audience.
There's a general,
like,
in the audience.
In the audience, and general he was saluting. And he fired his musket at the screen. But I think this time I got a chance to really sort of absorb it, and sort of there were loads of things that I'd kind of forgotten, like things that. Obviously, because I know what the story was and I know what the outcome of that story was, I was on the lookout for various other things, and there were some great little clues sort of left around, and, you know, people in photos, and it's a really, like, unnerving. I think it is a truly harrowing experience. But yeah, I think I was due a rewatch. It'd probably been, you know, well over a year since I saw it the first time. But yeah, so I bumped up my score, mate. So my score originally, I'd given it an 8 out of 10, and that's not the I think maybe
what's that
when we watched it,
B plus or something. I'm pretty sure I would have been around
I think it's an A. Or an A minus, maybe.
Yeah,
so now I bumped up to 9 out of 10, which is maybe an A, just an A.
A solid A.
So I think I've bumped up to that, because it's a difficult one, because it's, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, I prefer Midsommar to Hereditary, I prefer Hereditary to Midsommar. They are very, very different, but very similar at the same time. Like, there are lots of similar themes and things, but it's just a very different film. And yes, they're both about grief and loss, and yeah, but this is a completely, it's almost like a heartless film. It's got like no redeeming, it's a heartless film. Yeah, there's like no redeeming arcs for anybody, you know. I mean, no one's essentially the antagonist, that's the protagonist of this film. Everyone gets the shitty end of the stick, really. But
it's very bleak.
How many times have you seen it? Have you seen it just once?
That once in cinema. I was going to get the Blu-ray pretty soon, I think, and give it another go.
It's definitely worth a rewatch. I mean, the soundtrack as well
So someone put a video up somewhere. That guy, is it Colin Stetson or the guy who does the soundtrack? The way he does it, he does that never-ending breathing technique. I think it's got an actual name. It's not that. Where it's like the way he plays the saxophone or the trumpet, he's like breathing in through his nose whilst he's playing out at the same time. So it's like continuously looping over. Yeah, it's insane. And it sounds fantastic.
His lungs are so strong. He could blow up our water bottle.
I think the way it works is one lung exhales and the other lung inhales at the same time. So it's like...
it sounds pretty good. But especially the finale and the final swell of that music as sort of things are revealed. And it's just bizarre. It's a really unnerving. It gives me the creeps. And there are so many moments in this film where if it was a sort of different filmmaker or one of the standard jump scare crapolas, there are so many moments where you're like, there's a jump scare there. A jump scare could go there, but they're not. Like the jump scare sort of moments are like almost silent and someone in the corner
I'll never forget that bit in the cinema watching I think one of them wakes up and he thinks he sees a ghoul or a ghost in the corner of the room. And I don't think I've seen the film ever do it quite as effective as that, where you're really not sure if there's something there or not. So I'd like to watch it again just to see.
There's a few moments where it's sort of like POV, so it kind of just skims over something they're looking at, and you kind of see it in real time. And they're so effective, those moments. And even the moments, you know, that are jump scares essentially are just done with such patience, I guess. It's just like you know you're waiting for something, and when it comes, you feel like it's earned. That it made me go, whoa!
I'm looking forward to going, whoa! Again.
That's kind of it. I've been watching a few other bits and bobs, but nothing particularly horrific.
Saw a cool short film. I don't watch short films very often anymore. Every now and again, I'll randomly stumble upon one. It's called Stay at Home Dad. It's about 15 minutes long. It's on YouTube. Written by Cody Goodfellow, directed by John Skip and Andrew Cash. And it's about a guy who has boobs. A dad who has boobs and is feeding, he's like crying as he's feeding his baby. And then it sort of gets kind of weird from there. He sort of wants to, his wife's the breadwinner, so he stays at home. And then he has an operation to have boobs. And then he feeds the baby, and it sort of plays on some Lovecraftian crazy. There's a lot of like stop motion animation thrown in there that has a sort of 80s horror feel to it.
Boobs. Stop motion boobs.
Stop motion boobs. And it's good. I mean, there's like Cthulhu stuff going on. There's tentacled creatures going like all over the shop. So if you're into that kind of thing, I'd recommend it. There's also another one, actually, that reminds me. There's another stop-motion short film that is really worth watching called When Susurrus Stirs. It's based on a short story written by the guy... I lent you a book ages ago called In the River, In This River by Jeremy Robert Johnson.
Yeah.
It's based on a short story of his, and it's the most obscene, grotesque body horror film. Not just like short film, like film that you'd ever see, but it's all like stop-motion, sort of physical, practical effects. It's very R-rated. But like really rated. Yeah. That's definitely worth watching. So if you're up for a couple of practical effects short horror films, those are definitely recommend those.
Sounds good, man. Did I ever give that book back to you?
I've not seen you in person since then. Spirit.
That's a good excuse, if anything, isn't it? I'll get it sent up on the Amazon Prime, mate. That'll your brand new copy. I watched a short film, actually. I don't know if you've seen this advertised. Obviously a little bit more mainstream, but Jurassic World dropped a little short film called Battle at Big Rock, which is dropped a dinosaur egg, directed by Colin Trevorrow, obviously, who did Jurassic World. Did he do? No, he didn't do Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. 8-minute short film. So obviously, spoiler alert for Fallen Kingdom. Have you seen that?
No, that's a newer one, right? Latest one. Yeah, I've not seen it.
Oh, I was just about to do a spoiler alert. It's not huge, but kind of, basically, there are some ideas put across in this film that humans and dinosaurs are going to need to coexist at some point somewhere. Yeah, it's a bit. It is a bit like. I mean, that wouldn't happen. People get rounded up pretty quickly. There's not like thousands of them. There are probably less than 50. But yeah, so basically, it plays upon that. For people are having a nice family camping trip at Big Rock National Park, and some dinosaurs turn up, and obviously chaos ensues. So, I mean, if anything, this short film shows that humans and dinosaurs can't really coexist.
Yeah.
Even if they're big, big, cute. Plant eaters. What word am I thinking of?
Herbivores.
That's what I meant. yeah, so it's pretty cool. You know, if these, and there's some interesting bits in the credits as well. They're pretty fun. They kind of lean even more heavily. Yeah. There we go. I'm good at that. I'm good at the English, mate. I'm a writer. Remember that. there's some fun mid credits bit which kind of lean heavy on the world. Dinosaurs and humans coexisting, cool. And the carnage that would ensue. So
should I watch that before? I was going to watch that before I watched the Fallen Kingdom thing.
Yeah, watch it before. I don't think you're not going to get mugged off. You know, Fallen Kingdom. There's not like stuff in it where you're like, oh wow, this has completely changed my idea of what a Jurassic Park film could be. Yeah. It's just like this. It's a bit like,
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Is that like an impression of one of the smaller dinosaurs? Is it?
Stephen King's new book is out as well, so Institute, I've got that on Audible and I've started listening to that. Seems a bit like it's going to be like there's like dark forces and gifted children and an institute. So maybe like a bit X-Men, or like a bit like everyone's a bit like Carrie,
yeah,
where they've got people
like
have got
a Firestartery or something.
Firestarter, yeah. So I've just cracked into that. I've probably only listened to about 30 minutes of it so far. But, you know, the last three or four of Stephen King releases I've read, so I thought maybe I'll have a little Audible session.
Yeah.
You know?
The Outsider was good. Did you read that one?
I sure did. Yeah, I loved The Outsider. I thought it was great.
Yeah. And then there was the other one recently, Sleeping Beauties, which was like a massive one.
I didn't get around to that one. No. But, yeah.
Well, speaking of Stephen King,
this
week I went to check out, thank you, this week I went to check out the new It movie, It Chapter 2. Interestingly, It Chapter 1 wasn't called It Chapter 1, it was just called It. And then this one's called Chapter 2. Imagine reading a book and it's suddenly like you're halfway in, it goes Chapter 2. You know, what? So I just read chapter one.
Yeah. I didn't sign up for this.
So have you got some info?
Maybe it's one of those things where like they were like, we don't know how well it's going to do, but I thought they'd already originally planned.
At the end of It Chapter 1, which wasn't called It Chapter 1, it said It Chapter 2, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it did.
Yeah.
Maybe Chapter 2. The Kids, the Losers Club will return.
Yeah.
Okay, so It Chapter 2. It Chapter 2 is a 2019 American supernatural horror film and the sequel to the 2017 film It, both based on a 1986 novel by Stephen King, also called It. So 27 years after their first encounter with the terrifying Pennywise, Losers Club have grown up and moved away until a devastating phone call brings them back. It's PPI.
that's the ending soon, isn't it? There won't be such a thing as PPI soon. I think the statute of limitations is running out or something. So
what?
I know, yeah. So Rotten, this one hasn't scored as well as the first one. 62% Rotten Tomatoes, 79% audience score, 7 out of 10 IMDb. The Rotten Tomatoes aggregator text, whatever they call that bit, says, It Chapter 2 proves bigger doesn't always mean scarier for horror sequels, but a fine cast and a faithful approach to the source material keeps this follow-up afloat. So, I mean, how did you feel about it? I mean, I've got to be honest. Like, when It Chapter 1 came out, I think we were riding on a new wave of Stephen King sort of fandom, new adaptations, new books were coming out, and it just felt very sort of like we were hitting some Stephen King prime. I'm kind of a bit bored of the Stranger Things style kids attack a monster thing now. I don't know about you. So I wasn't looking forward to this one as much as the previous one.
I mean, I was looking forward to this a lot. Think about how we felt at the start of the year, you know, that we were going to get Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
It Chapter 2. What else? Castle Rock. Yeah. You know, the world's gone like Stephen King crazy, but nothing has really, like, been, oh, my God, wow. And I loved It Chapter 1. It Chapter 1 or It was, yeah, was great. Pet Sematary was kind of lame. And I think this is fine. I think it's good. It emulates a lot of what happened in the first film and does it well. It's long, and you know, I'm not, yeah, the kind of person to go bloody hell, that's a slog. I mean, I'm fine to sit down and like a good boy and, you know, watch, eat my popcorn and stuff, but it didn't, the first 2 hours kind of went by quite quickly for me.
Same. Yeah, but, I think a lot of people said, but the really final moves.
Yeah, but the final 50 minutes, it did kind of feel like, oh, come on, wrap it up now. It could have easily been.
Do you feel like it started to, because I did the same thing, I started to check my watch about 2 hours in, when he went into the sewers. Did you think that's because that's when it starts to tread the ground of the first one? And this is what I said was the problem with doing the book in two separate stories, because in the book, these happen at the same time. So the final fights.
Yep.
Sort of end happening at the same
parallel
time. Yeah, exactly.
Like parallels,
yeah,
of them. Yeah, so the similarities in the way what happens and the ending are supposed to be similar, but now it feels like we're going over old ground. We've kind of already
done it. Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
And it almost felt like in the finale when people got split up and there were more and more, you know, visions and dream sequences and that. Yeah. It almost felt like, right, well, we've had enough of this. Let's get the wheels in motion. Let's have a finale. It could have easily lost 30 minutes and been just as effective. And I don't think it was.
I'd like to see a supercut. Let's see someone take both films and sort of make a 3-hour cut out of both of them.
It almost feels like Pennywise's presence in this film. It doesn't, even though, like, yeah, there's loads of him and there's loads of, you know, him terrorizing them as adults and stuff. It doesn't quite feel as intense. In the first film, I was like, oh, here he comes. Whoa. This film, it's like, there he is. Not him. him.
He's trying to more ludicrous in this one, which I think is okay, because it's kind of like a Freddy Krueger sort of thing. Like, he gets more ludicrous as time goes on. But that's not to say, I think it was smart by including a couple of scary scenes, because there's one scene in this one that I found more, like, at both films, I think, the most scary. Maybe on par with Georgie's death at the beginning of the first one. It was like the under the bleachers bit, the little girl.
Oh yeah, that was pretty creepy.
I think
that's where it really does come into its own, which is when you've got these interactions between Pennywise and like an unknowing kid. This is the thing, like, Pennywise threatening a kid is scary. You're like, oh my god, he's gonna eat that kid or kill that kid or whatever. When he's threatening one of the main characters, you're almost a bit like, yeah, I mean, I know, obviously, there's just as much of a threat from him to adults, because we see in the opening and obviously other things, but it just doesn't feel, his presence doesn't feel as, it almost feels like he's going about doing these things, but does he really care? Whereas in the first film, he's like, it's everything to him. He needs to feed, he needs to taste the fear, all of these things. In this film, it feels like he's kind of just going about doing these things, and then...
Yeah, there's the same thing as well, where I feel like he doesn't pose any threat, because he's had them in his grasp before and not done anything. I know people say it's about him trying to salt the meat, but I think that gets to a point where it's like, yeah, but you're going to die, mate. Like, they're going to kill you. You need to...
A genuine threat, I think, which I think he does well in the first film as well, is when he manipulates others to like attack the Losers Club. So Henry Bowers in this one does feel like a genuine threat.
It's a little bit goofy, I thought, the Henry stuff this time, but when he's got a knife, like, he's a physical presence and he does feel kind of
again,
scary.
I feel like he was gone. He was done and dusted and dealt with pretty quick sharp, you know? I think it does well at keeping some stuff from the book. Like, I mean, it doesn't lean massively into the, you know, parallel, is it like interdimensional stuff, but we get the like Native American
ritual
sort
of
flashbacks and rituals of Chud. And all that stuff. We don't get like a cosmic turtle or any mention of cosmic turtle. We don't get the Losers Club having to have sex with each other to get out of the sewer in adult or child form, you know, because it's going to raise a lot of questions. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, so let's talk about this cast, the staff, because the staff on the shift are pretty good. Pretty well chosen. We've got Jessica Chastain taking over as Beverly Marsh. Pretty spot on casting. James McAvoy playing Bill Denbrough. A little bit off left field, I think, but James McAvoy could do anything. Bill Hader, as Richard told you, a lot of people are saying he's like Oscar worthy. I'm like, that's a bit far fetched. I mean, he's great in this. Like, he's fantastic.
Oscar worthy. But Oscar he's great. But you know, he's Richie grown up, right?
Like, yeah, he's doing it very, very well. And there's a couple of emotional beats that were really good. But I mean, Oscar worthy, that's ludicrous. I don't know how to say his name. Isaiah Mustafa plays a grown up.
Mike Isaiah Campbell. Mustafa, did you know he is the Old Spice dude?
What, the muscly guy?
Yep.
The muscly Old Spice guy. Really?
Yeah.
That's insane.
So I was just stumbled across something where it said, oh yeah, and the guy from the Old Spice advert is Mike. And I was a bit like, oh my God, yeah. So that's he's crazy. The only one who stayed in Derry. Everyone else has moved away, but he's the only one who stayed. And so he hasn't forgot anything. He remembers everything.
Jay Ryan is taken over as Ben Hanscom. Ben Hanscom is the sort of the chubby kid who has grown up into a sort of a male glamour model / architect / like a very sort of gravelly, lovely voice. Like he's turned into like the perfect man.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Luke. Whoa.
James.
Were you all right in the film? Did you watch it a couple of times?
James Ransone plays Eddie Casbrack. Eddie, that's like a perfect casting. Like he looks like the guy grown up. Same with Jessica Chastain. And he's sort of got the same way about him, the same sort of timbre of his voice and everything.
He's basically grown up to be the same person, but instead of his mum dictating everything to him, it's his wife, which happens in real life sometimes.
Yeah. Andy Bean plays Stanley Uris. Not the same Mr. Bean that you're thinking of now. Different Mr. Bean plays Stanley Uris. I mean, he looks a lot like how you'd imagine a grown-up wants to be. And Bill Skarsgård plays Pennywise. He looks exactly like he would grown up for 27 years. It's fantastic work.
There are a few Skarsgårds, aren't there? There's Alex Skarsgård. The dad
There's a family tree of them. If you look, like there's tons. Stella Skarsgård.
But I get confused. There's a Peter Sarsgaard as well. He's not involved, is he?
I don't know. Nobody knows. That's the thing about them. Nobody knows how many's in the family. Even they don't know who they're related to. They just assume they're related to
everyone. But one of them pops up as the lead in a film every now and again. Oh, I didn't know bloody Bill. I didn't know Bobby Skarsgård was any good. Oh, yeah, he's won an Oscar now.
It's like the, what are they called? The family who's in everything in American films.
Baldwins.
Baldwins, yeah. Although we only care about
bloody
one now.
Baldwins.
We only care about
Bill Skarsgård is only 29 years old, which means he was only 27 when he played Pennywise originally.
He's pretty good. He is kind of freaky looking in general. Like that eye thing, that's not special effects. He can move his eyes independently, like a chameleon.
Very dribbly.
Very, very dribbly, dude. That's why they cast him. They were like, I can't read the scripts.
He's not like over the top either, do you know what I mean? Like, he monologues a bit, but not loads. He insults the Losers Club a bit, but not loads. Yeah. You know what I mean? It just doesn't feel like he's too over the top and theatrical and ridiculous. You know when sometimes villains in films are a bit too theatrical and you're like, just stab him.
Yeah.
He's doing all this, just stab him in the neck. So that's one good thing.
Yeah. So we start off exactly the same as the book, so there's basically a young gay couple get abused and it's quite difficult to watch, really. It's difficult to read.
Because the homophobic youths, I mean, they're little shitbags, mind. There's one of them in particular. I'm like, oh, you little shitbag. Yeah. I would like to kneecap you.
The one who stole the hat. Steals the hat.
The one who stole the hat on his head.
So they beat up this gay couple and they chuck one of them over into the river. And just as he's being dragged away by the river, Pennywise finds him, pulls him out, bites his boob, eats his boob off.
This is weird, like, I feel like as an opening scene, maybe we didn't need to see that. Maybe we could just have seen Pennywise take him and then couldn't find him, and then the balloons float out from underneath the bridge. We kind of get like the exact scene of Georgie getting his arm bit off, but obviously out in, yeah, not in broad daylight, but out in the open like that. Considering, I don't know, it feels like, would he let someone see him and not?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's I saw some people saying that the scene was unnecessary because of the gay bashing aspect of it, but I feel part of the book that gets lost in the translation is the fact that when Pennywise, this every 27 years, it's not just Pennywise that returns, but it's like the evil of the town. Like, yeah, the town, yeah, itself becomes infected. And
I think what feels particularly impactful about this is that obviously Pennywise, in terms of this gay couple getting attacked and one of them getting thrown into the river, like, that person's a victim there. They've been a, yeah, victim of an attack, but Pennywise is attacking and killing him. So it's like, obviously Pennywise has got absolutely no,
yeah,
you know, he's an opportunist, compass, if anything. Yeah. He's got no moral compass. Like, he's not thinking, right, they were attacking them, I'm going to go and kill them. And his moral compass is, well, as I said, he's opportunistic, where he's just going to,
yeah,
kill and eat whoever's falling in the river. Gay, straight,
yeah,
black, white, he'll bite you and
on the suck bum. And the boob.
On the bum and in the boob. And then, yeah, the boob and then on the bum and then rip your arm off. And it don't matter. See, that's why he goes for kids. It's weird, though, because in It Chapter 1, does he kill any adults?
He kills this same adult. Well, they're kind of like young adults, aren't they? Adrian, I think they're
gay. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, I got you.
Yeah, opens in the same way.
Oh, yeah, this is the first scene of the book, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And then it cuts to the Georgie scene. So then we kind of have a whole section where Mike is calling around everyone, and we get to see they've all moved on in their lives and they've all become very successful in different bits of their life. Like Jessica Chastain is now owns a clothing label. Bill Denver is now the Stephen King. Essentially, he's a novelist with movies out, and they keep joking about how he can't
yeah,
finish, like, can't end books properly.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Ben Hanscom is a male model, super sex slash architect. Who else? Richard Toews is a stand-up comedian in America. Eddie Kasprak he owns like a limo service in America, in New York.
He does what does he do? Like risk assessments or something like that.
Oh, I think. Yeah, they changed that then. Cause
yeah, they did change it.
That,
yeah,
makes more sense, exactly, though. Risk assessment does make more sense for, yeah, his character.
Stanley seems to be fairly successful. But when we see him, they're either booking a holiday, yeah, to like Bali or something like that, or somewhere nice.
Yeah.
He seems to be doing all right for himself. Maybe he's saved up. But yeah, everyone sort of reacts in different ways.
They've all kind of forgot about it as well, haven't they? And they've all. Yeah.
But just hearing, you know, come back to Derry because it's returned, it does sort of awaken something in everyone. Because when you think about it, a lot, like, if this is real life, a lot of people just wouldn't come back. They'd be like, what? Especially if they didn't remember, they'd be like, what? No, I got fingers on, mate.
But they got a bloody. They see the scar on the hand, and it's like the first time they like forgot that it was there or something.
So yeah, everyone reacts differently. Richie like froze up. Eddie crashes his car. But yeah, everyone does agree to come back except Stanley.
Yeah,
who very quietly and very, you know, there's no hurrah about this. He just goes and commits suicide in the bath.
Yeah. So Jessica Chastain, I keep saying Jessica Chastain, what's the character's name again? Beverly, Bev. So she's in an abusive relationship. She gets a call and she's like, I need to head back. And then her husband very quickly realizes he's an abusive husband, controlling, a bit like her dad, a bit of a parallel to her dad. In the book, there's a great bit where she steals, because he gets the belt and he's trying to whip her with the belt. It seems kind of harsh for like the first 5 minutes of the movie for this scene, because it's pretty high energy.
Yeah.
She steals the belt from him in the book and she whips his balls over and over again. I felt like that bit was missed. I felt like we missed a close up of the balls being walloped.
To be fair, though, like this scene in terms of the book, this is almost exactly how I pictured it.
Yeah.
It felt like exactly the same. Sans ball whipping.
Yeah. Well, I felt it feels really close to the book for quite a lot of the first hour or so. So the losers all head back to Derry. They go to like a Chinese restaurant.
Get yourself down a local. Get yourself down a local Chinese. What I want to know is what the conversation they had. Where should we meet? Because, you know, as kids, they probably didn't go out for Chinese meals together. And Mike just went, I'll be honest with you, I love Chinese. And I am craving one right now. So let's all meet at a local Chinese.
It looks like a good one. It's got like a table that spins around and stuff. And you get fortune cookies. I don't think we actually get fortune cookies in Chinese restaurants here. Do we?
I've just got to ask for them, mate. They're under the counter, mate. You got to ask for them. Can I have a fortune cookie? They go, can you handle it? And I go, I can handle it, mate. Don't you leave in here crying.
This is like really nice when they're all reunited and they're all kind of like, ah, oh, where have you been? And then Levin's like, Richie Toji is like the life of the party. He's like, that's Ben, because everyone doesn't recognize him. He's like, who the fuck's that guy? And it's Ben. And there's a really funny bit where he does an impression of Jabba the Hutt. And
yeah, it's lovely. It's like, oh, I want to be mates with these guys. That's how I kind of felt. But yeah, things kind of go a bit haywire pretty quickly. And again, these visions are pretty much the same as in the book, right? Like a lot of the things, like
almost exactly the same. I remember the eyeball thing, and the one wing thing. Yeah, it's almost identical.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, right? It's a weird one because for me, the true horror nature of films like this, they get a little bit lost when you kind of know everything's a vision.
It's all out, and you know
that everything's gonna just end, and someone's gonna go, whoa. It's just a vision. I feel like you do kind of lose. I mean, I know that's how it was in the book, but you lose some of the genuine threat. Film,
I thought the whole idea was all these visions were still Pennywise. So, like later in the film, we've got the leper man. He was still Pennywise in the first.
Yeah.
It was still like he could die at that point. Do you know what I mean? It felt like the stakes were at the point where Eddie could die if he was caught by the leper. In this film, it was just a vision. It wasn't actually there. So there was never any threat it felt that way. It never felt like there was any threat of him dying.
It definitely felt like that way, because sometimes people would end up in scenarios and they'd look back at the scenarios and the place where they were was completely different.
Yeah.
Almost like Pennywise had created the vision of that. And again, that does kind of take away the genuine threat of Pennywise, because there wasn't really much consistency, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, but they realised that the fortune cookies has bits of paper in it. It spells out, I guess, Stanley couldn't cut it, and we find out that he died. There's a weird, this bit wasn't in the book, was the whole idea of Bev.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Saying that she saw them all die. And if they don't stop Pennywise, we're all going to die at some point. So they have to stop Pennywise.
Were we made to think that she'd seen that when she saw the deadlights in chapter one?
Yeah.
Oh.
But so Mike's trying to get them all to stay, because they've all suddenly remembered Pennywise at the same time, right? So they're all trying to leave. They're going back to the hotel.
Ah, Pennywise. Yeah, I remember him. What's he up to these days? He's still murdering kids, right? Yeah, that's classic Pennywise. Yeah.
I'm off. So, Richie Toji's heading off. Eddie's heading off. They don't want to stay. They all go back to the hotel. I think Bill goes back to Mike's place above the library, and he realizes that Mike is not very well. Like he's living in squalor.
He's basically obsessed. He's living in squalor, but he's obsessed with Pennywise, and he knows all this stuff. So he met a Native American tribe who showed him a vision.
Yeah.
Of it arriving to Earth. So we see it in like different forms. So it's obviously taken different forms over the years, things that would be, I guess, scarier to the people who were around then. So like some sort of bird thing.
Yeah.
What else is there?
There's a bird thing and it turns like a big monster thing. I think it's like an indescribable monster.
And after a while, I'll just be a clown.
It's weird because when he's first turned into a clown, like he's like a man clown, like a man with a big head. Like that's the most terrifying thing of all, the man with a big head. Like a man receding clown. Hairline. Yeah. Maybe he's attacking men who are conscious about their hairline.
Leave us alone. All right. We've got enough shit to deal with over here.
Yeah.
Bill with like a microdose or something. Just basically so he sees he saw everything that he sees, like with the ritual of Chud, which is basically they've got like a Chud. They've got like a leather box. What would you describe it?
Leather vase or something. Yeah.
Like a thing which has obviously got all these markings
on
it.
The original Tupperware container.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, oh, mate, I've got some leftover spaghetti bolognese here. Got anything to stick in it? Stick it in the ritual Chud thing. Go on, Chud. Go on.
Yeah.
No, we can't do that. So obviously there's a way of that all these people stand around and you can trap Pennywise inside and mug him off somehow. Is that right?
Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. At the same time, Henry Bowers is still he lived at the end after the last one, and he went to the mental institution because he killed his dad, and now he's seeing balloons and there's a dead body. Oh, it's the body of what's his name, Patrick Hotstetter, I think.
Yeah, it's the body of like his mate from the first film, isn't it? And this was good. This was like some really good makeup. He was sort of just a horrible zombie bloke.
Yeah.
And he's sort of showing Henry Bowers the way. So I'm sure, obviously, he's Pennywise in some form, showing Henry Bowers.
There's a lot of that kind of stuff in the book. The stuff where kids that he killed, he'd use them as sort of ways to manipulate people. Also, the car that pulls up is the Christine car. Although it's not necessarily the Christine car in the book, anyway, it's meant to be the same kind of car as Christine, and it had like a Shining vibe where you've been lured on by ghosts. Do you know what I mean? To do something. But so Henry attacks. I think it's fairly quick, isn't it? It seems to zoom by. Henry sort of attacks him in the hotel. Is that right?
So I think before that happens, I think they have. So he escapes, but then I think we understand what each loser from the Losers Club has got to do. They've got to like retrieve an artifact from their past. And they're all told that they've got like split up and go and find it. I guess this is another thing that kind of happens that really does prolong the running time, is that everyone goes off and has like their own individual little experiences with Pennywise when they try and find these artifacts, which they don't really know. Obviously, Mike is the one saying, go off and get your artifact. What would your artifact be, Luke?
I don't know. But would you... I'm trying to work out the best way to do this, because it does take ages. Like, you only need a couple. Like, I think you just need the main one, so maybe Jessica Chastain's Bev's one, because that's quite a good one.
This is pretty good, yeah. So Beverly obviously goes back to her old home, where there's a elderly woman living. She invites her in for tea. She's creepy, man. This was the first teaser trailer we saw.
In the teaser trailer, it seemed kind of scary. In the cinema, people were howling with laughter.
Yeah. People were laughing.
It's weird, like Bev turns one way, she's drinking the tea, and behind her, the woman's like, just like jangling around. Do you know what I mean? She just sort of like spider walks across the... Yeah, she's just like a little funky chicken dance across the room.
I didn't like it because she was naked. You couldn't see you couldn't see her very well. She was in a dark room and she kind of went... I mean, it was freaky. I find it freaky. And I find the reveal of this, obviously, so Bev goes around her house. She finds like a hole in the wall.
She's just like she starts taking off the woman's skirting board.
Get a change of rooms in here. Look, she's mucking. She takes off. She finds the letter, obviously, the love letter, the Winterfire, thing.
Play on that all the time, don't he?
Still just, thinks that.
Jesus just Christ. Get over
it. Still thinks that Bill wrote it. Idiot.
They could have been more subtle on that stuff. Like, every time she reads it, you see Ben looking over. like a kicked puppy. Just,
yeah, he's like,
I mean, we get it. It's a love triangle.
Why don't we do handwriting test so we can see who's handwriting? Already know it's Bill.
Oh. So, yeah, and then obviously we do get a good reveal where the old woman comes out as like a big, horrible, lanky, saggy boob witch. I mean, that was pretty terrifying because there was a few heavy footsteps. It reminded me of that bit in It Follows. You remember that really tall dude?
Yeah.
It was a bit like that. But when she gets away, obviously she realizes that that house is like condemned.
Derelict, yeah. It's like, yeah.
Derelict.
I actually quite like that reveal. I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, definitely. So Bill goes back to the storm drain where Georgie had his arm off and he was killed. And there's another little boy there called Dean who's just like milling about. And Bill, bit weird, is like going, if you ever see a clown or hear a clown, don't just run far away. But and he obviously, and the little boy does say, I've heard voices of a clown and little kids down a bloody shower drain, haven't I?
Yeah. Bill doesn't really get a proper scare at this. Oh, no, he does, yeah. He puts his arm in the drain. And then all the arms and fingers grab his arm.
So
that one could have been skipped over. I don't think they even needed that scare. He could have just reached in and got the thing. There could have been like a near scare.
The thing is, because everybody needed to go off and have their own little story here, it felt like a lot. Like seven people going off and, or six. Is it six now without Stan? It felt like a lot. Do you know what I mean? It felt like, it was almost like I was mentally ticking it off in my head. When I was watching it, I was like, well, that's those two.
Felt a bit like a game, like collectible. No, I'm not a big fan of those parts of games where it's like collect seven.
Seven scary bits.
Yeah.
Who else? I don't think they were all like different enough.
Yeah.
It almost felt like people would just go somewhere. There was something from their past that they kind of hadn't really faced up to. Then there was a scare. Then they got their thing, and then they were like, "Oh, actually, it's all right now."
So
it almost felt like
Eddie's was all right. Eddie went to the chemist, and the chemist farted.
Yeah,
like, it was really weird. It's the same chemist from before. I just think the tone of it.
Yeah, same chemist.
Really,
he was absolutely. He was ancient, wasn't he? This guy.
Yeah. He just sort of walked away. I'll get you aspirin here. And like it was, it's just like overly comedic.
Yeah. So Ben goes to like the high school and he remembers like an old encounter he had with it. This is something we need to talk about.
Yeah.
Something we haven't talked about. They've obviously de-aged the child actors.
I didn't even notice when I was watching it. Did you?
Jesus. I literally couldn't take my eyes off of it. Everyone looked like PS4 graphics. Like especially Richie.
I've heard a few I was listening to another podcast talking about it and they were like, they didn't even notice.
So a few people, they've clearly not changed. So I think Beverly, they haven't changed.
Finn Wolfhart, that Reggie tells you.
Finn Wolfhart,
he looks a bit weird, actually.
Because he looks 45 now. Yeah. him, and they changed Ben. Ben looked very smooth, sheen.
Didn't even notice it.
Yeah.
Didn't they get voice actors to play it, to do their voices as well, or something?
Yeah, that's true. Because obviously some of them bloody voice dropped, don't they? I think Eddie was a little bit different as well.
There's a really funny bit of Eddie with the bat and ball. I don't really remember what part it was in or why he was doing it, but he was just playing his bat and ball.
Yeah. Was that when they were under the underground clubhouse? So Richie goes to abandoned arcade where he finds like a game token. Yeah. We get a little bit of old Henry Bowers bullying him.
We also get the gay thing that's completely new.
Oh, is it? Where he called him a.
Well, he sort of had a crush on one of Henry's cousins or something when they played the game.
Okay. I didn't realize that was legit. I thought maybe he was just being pally with him and he was accused of having feelings for him. But maybe he does or did.
I thought so because at the end they changed it so he loved Eddie.
I
thought it was kind of a seed for that, which kind of makes sense. I quite like that they added that detail. Richie's scare was quite good. There was the whole thing with
the
colours changed. I've only seen that in one film before, and that's the In the Mouth of Madness.
Really?
Where like the Lovecraftian God thing just changes the world and makes it blue.
The colour grading went
a bit
weird. And obviously this is from the book as well, isn't it, with the lumberjack statue.
It's a bit like the Black Hole Sun music video. His face kind of like twists and contorts.
Yeah. It was pretty scary, but again, I was a bit like, well, it's just a vision. Do you know what I mean? It just felt
empty. Yeah.
And that kind of like that kind of loomed over everything for me in this, where I kind of constantly just felt, well, it's just a vision. Oh, I'll be all right. Well, it's just a vision.
Oh, wait, hang on a sec. So I thought Bill's thing was the piece of paper with the boat, but then he also gets the bike.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he does.
And so obviously, we get the big Stephen King cameo, which is pretty good. I thought Stephen King's a charismatic guy. Like, he plays that quite well. But again, you go, I don't like your endings, or whatever he says. Like,
he was like reading one of his books.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was a bit on the nose, but I liked it. And, you know, when he turned up, there was a little bit of murmuring in the crowd. And I was like, yeah, come on, guys. That's right. You know don't you?
Keep up. There's,
Silver away.
There's a funny bit where he said, I'll be honest. Yeah. So I can't think of many actors who could do that with that much, like, earnestness than James McAvoy going, I hoe silver away. We've like fully like committing to that ludicrous.
So and the bike basically like bends in half and he like falls over and then, but he manages to somehow fix it. He's like, yep, that's all right. That did.
So there's a couple of things. So they're playing to the book, but I don't think it translates that well to today. Like when he said, like, beep, beep, Richie, that stuff's kind of good in the book, but those sort of Stephen King-ism jokes, I don't think play very well in today's. Yeah.
You mean when the Losers Club are saying that?
Yeah, like, the way they sort of talk to each other, it kind of doesn't feel like, very what? Real. Like, adult or like friends wouldn't say that kind of thing. Maybe back in the 80s or whenever. I even doubt it then. But
yeah, because back then it kind of feels a bit like a sort of time capsule where anything goes, essentially. But when like when Jessica Chastain is saying it to Richie, I was a bit like, you what?
Yeah, it's weird. But it felt like a more Easter egg than, more like an Easter egg than for the story, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So some of the other like artifacts from their past include like a shower cap, which was Stanley's when they're in the clubhouse.
There's a great bit in the clubhouse again with adult Richie doing an impression of Pennywise. I found that genuinely.
Yeah, that was good.
Loud, funny. Yeah,
he comes out of like a dark corner as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And what else? And Mike finds the rock, which was apparently the rock that started their fight against the Bowers gang.
Yeah, it's a great rock fight. Yeah.
Yep. And when do we get the bit when Henry attacks Richie in the hotel? Is that next?
He goes home, doesn't he? Well, he goes back to the hotel after he gets attacked by the leper, and he's got like a gun call over him. And he goes into the shower and he gets stabbed in the face.
He gets stabbed right in the face by Richie. Henry.
Yeah.
And obviously Henry's got like a weird, there was a good line, isn't there, when Henry's got like his weird mullet and someone says something about him, like still having a mullet.
Yeah. It's probably Richie. It sounds like something he'd say.
Get rid of that haircut. You've had it for 20 years. God damn it.
Yeah.
But he manages to stab Henry in the chest.
He just gets in the shower quite casually with a knife stick in his face.
Yeah.
It's quite good.
Around about this time is, Henry gets away, but then the group receive a phone. So most of the group are together now, but the group receive a phone call from Bill, who's obviously going through the mill. He's like, I failed to save Georgie. And then there's another boy, this Dean, who is at a carnival, so he sort of goes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so he goes to try and find. This is completely new. This is
This is new.
He goes to find Dean because he knows that Pennywise is going to get him for some reason. I can't remember why he thinks that. But then he goes into like a house and mirrors thing. The way the Dean kid dies is kind of brutal. I wasn't quite expecting it to be that brutal. Again,
this is a problem because of everything being a vision. I just thought, is this a vision as well?
Oh no, I thought.
And when he died, I thought, oh, is he dead, or is that a vision as well? I mean, that's the thing. The consistency was a bit off for me. Like I couldn't tell what was real and what was not.
It was weird. They should have just made everything. His thing is like, I'm going to give all the adults some visions whilst I go around town eating kids, just munching on kids.
Yeah.
Surely he should be giving the kids visions, and or like,
or he might be doing around. That as well. He might be multitasking.
Surely it would be the other way around. Going. Like, you want to salt the easy meat because that's like your kids. They're not going to do much against you. You can salt them, just scare the crap out of them. And you can eat them later on, like you let them grow like old berries or something. But the adults, get them dead. Get them dead,
yeah.
Mate.
Get them dead right off, yeah. Because obviously Pennywise kills a girl, yeah. Kills a girl at a baseball game as well, which is earlier in the film, right?
I found that a bit genuinely scary. I just yeah. found it almost unbearable. The bit he's counting down, he's not going to blow the birthmark off of her face. And he's counting down 3, 2, 1, but that unbearable pause between, like it was like he's like a wild animal at that point. You just don't know what he's going to do. Terrifying.
Yeah, that was pretty impactful, I think. Yeah, so after all this kind of happens, they do end up back together and they...
They literally retread old ground from here on
out. Retread old ground, yeah. So, yeah, so basically this whole final act, I guess, is going back to the old house, which obviously led down to the sewers before. They do manage to get the best of Henry as well, who goes to where Mike's in the town hall sort of place, and they do manage to kill him. Well, Richie... Did he like axe him in the head?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Henry's dealt with pretty, you know, pretty quick sharp, and I feel keeping him around may have been a little bit better. But yeah, so now they're on their way to the house where so Bill's kind of gone there on his own originally, hasn't he? And the others sort of all follow.
Yeah.
And then basically they go back to the same place, but they make it to the sewers. The place where they faced it before is like the same but different. Obviously, not loads of kids floating around in the massive.
There's the John Carpenter head thing as well, head spider.
Yes, this was great. I mean, this was a huge, huge homage to the Thing, including a line which I think is maybe the same.
It's exactly the same. It's
exactly the same. Yeah. You gotta be fucking kidding me. This was good. So it's obviously comes out of the fridge, but it's Stan this time. So Stan, a kid version of Stan.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, does his head fall off or does he knock its head off? Or?
I think he just but falls off,
But then some spidery legs, very similar to the creature in The Thing. And yeah, this was pretty terrifying because it was running around like crazy. Yeah. And again, it was almost, it was retreading old ground because it kind of got like split up in the house.
Yeah, different versions of Pennywise
were
They give were coming Richie or someone a bit of fence, you're like this can kill him or something. I think that's about that around that point.
So this kills monsters. Why? Well, if you believe it does, you can kind of tell what's going to happen with Richie because, not Richie, sorry, Eddie.
Yeah,
because he gets a moment where he freezes and he's like in the corner, sort of like I can't do it. I couldn't help you. So we kind of know that he's obviously going to have a moment of bravery later.
So
they manage to get down into the sewer, into the old. Big sort of cave area where they fought Pennywise the first time, and they go down a really narrow sort of tunnel well thing.
Yeah.
Climb all the way down there. So which is like they're in the first level of the boss and they go even deeper.
Yeah.
Second level of the boss.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about this entire, because I mean, what was this last bit? I mean, it was them fighting. Oh yeah, well, they did the ritual of Chud when he put it all the stuff into the vase and set it on fire.
Burned it, yeah.
But then it didn't work, and then Stanley apparently knew that it didn't work, but thought it would work for them for some reason. And then Pennywise comes out as a big spider clown, which I mean he does turn into a big spider in the book and the original series, but I just felt like it went on for way too long, and it was just. It was doing almost exactly the same as last time, right? I think there's a bit more.
Again, it felt like a video game boss where like it's massive and terrifying, but like it's not. If you just move or just hide behind things, it's going to be fine. Do you know what I mean? It's going to go again. And I think they could have done a little bit more with the creature design here because it just felt like Pennywise stuck on a big spidery body.
It just felt like one more of his because the Spider-Man is the big reveal of who he really is, but it still felt like he was.
So it's supposed to be like the only thing that like human eyes and brains can put a vision to.
Yeah.
It's almost like we can't comprehend the true nature of what it is. So that's what we kind of see. And I don't know, I just didn't really feel like that. I feel like...
It just felt like another of his illusions, sort of thing.
And I've seen some like fan art and stuff of sort of a spidery Pennywise, and it looked really good, like a sort of weird Pennywise face hanging upside down on a spidery face. That was pretty creepy. I quite like the deadlights sort of coming down and sort of just hovering there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they did some good stuff as well, where the deadlights sort of shone through the back of Pennywise's head.
Yeah,
like opened his mouth in a big horrible flap.
I feel like it could have done with the extra cosmic stuff, like the turtle, or like some weird, it didn't have to be a turtle, but some weird extra dimensional kind
macro,
of...
Is it the macroverse? The macroverse, is that the stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, it could have easily got there with that.
Just to separate it from, like if they all got caught in the deadlights and then there was a battle on some other cosmic plane in their minds or something.
Because I feel like the visions now took me out of the final battle.
Yeah,
I felt like Beverly being in the toilet with the blood rising, Ben being in the thing, and then obviously the thing that was good was Eddie and Richie doing the doors again. The scary, not scary at all, very scary. Yeah, that was pretty cool because that felt like that was part of this thing. But all the visions again just felt like surely Pennywise is trying to kill him. Why is he going right? They've ran into that little cavern, have they? I have a vision.
Yeah,
I have a bloody vision. This will sort you out.
It's weird,
it almost felt a little bit. I mean, there is a really good moment which I kind of like. I laughed, but at the same time, I thought it was done really well, which was where the deadlights caught Richie, where he's like mid sentence.
Yeah.
He's trying to save Mike. I think he's shouting something over to Mike. Hey, Mike is dong.
Yeah, it's not super sudden. And I think Eddie has his hero moment when he saves him. He throws a bit of fence. And he thinks he's killed him, but then he gets...
This is another thing. Like, they all go into this final battle with Pennywise. I mean, I can't remember what it's like in the book. But with nothing. They've got no weapons, no...
Yeah.
Apart from that bit of fence, they've got nothing. I think as kids, you kind of think, what are kids? They're going in there, you know, to they don't really know what's going to... But as adults, you might go, I'll take a bloody crow.
Yeah, some baseball bat, rip crowbar. A spoke off your bike, use that, use anything.
Yeah, and it almost felt like, what are they going to do when they've actually got to fight this big spider? Just run away, because there's nothing they can do.
Yeah. There's the big reveal where, I didn't realise this, but to be fair, Bev and Ben, you know, they're made to be with each other because they've got one letter difference in the name. But they're kind of like, they're going through their own little visions. One's getting buried, one's getting drowned in blood, and then they hear each other... saying the poem, swanning on about that poem.
Get over the poem. You're both maybe going to die.
35 years old.
I wrote a poem 27 years ago. It was top quality.
Yeah.
Get over it. Ain't that good? My heart burns there too. Where?
Yeah, what you got about, mate?
In the fire? Shut up, mate. Grow up.
They save each other. Oh, yes. And they... I don't think they smooch, but they're a little bit smoochy. Maybe they do smooch. I can't remember.
They smooch a little bit later, don't they?
Yeah.
And then Eddie unfortunately gets impaled as well when Eddie saves Richie from the deadlights. He gets impaled by a spider leg.
Yeah.
It basically seems like, well, they're not going to be able to beat him in any way. And then Bill just has a bit of a realization where he goes, maybe we'll just like, make him believe he's weaker than he is, insult him over and over. I don't know how they get to this.
So if someone said earlier, things can only act in the way they physically are in the world, or something way smarter than that. They're limited by their physical presence in the world. So they think if they make him be something smaller physically, they can damage him. Call them names. They're like, you're so small. You're really small. God, how small
really
are you?
Really small.
God, you're so small.
How small are you? Teeny. Oh, get really small.
How do they beat him in the book? Is it macroverse turtle shit?
So Ed is a spider. I think they just sort of murk him. I think the whole thing is like... yeah, I mean, they
put a glass on top of him.
Throw him outside. So I think making him a spider is kind of bringing him into like a physical form. So, and it's like shooting out eggs. So there's gonna be mini Pennywises, and Ben is like stomping on the eggs, and he, what's his name gets a leg for him. So he does. That's the same. But then I think they just sort of stabbing him and shit. I can't really remember. But maybe it's more than that. I think the whole thing of was making him a spider was making him a physical thing that could be hurt. I think. I can't quite remember. Not that clear. Abstract in a way.
They make him shrink into like a little deflating helium balloon.
Like bird poo, he looks like at the end.
Look at you, you're weak, you're small, you're just a load of bird shit. Just a little load of bird shit that I don't care. And they pull his heart out.
Yeah, yeah.
And they all squash his heart together until like he's dead, you know. But unfortunately they've lost Richie, he dies.
Eddie.
They all manage to escape. You know, this is a classic, like everything collapsing. You know, we've beaten the boss. Now everything's gonna collapse itself.
Yeah, a little bit too.
But they get out. Safe. But in the book it's all of Derry, isn't it? Which like
pretty much, yeah, yeah. So there's floods throughout the entire town and stuff. Like the sewer, like all everything kind of collapses in on itself. Yeah, it's like more apocalyptic.
Nice place to live, is it?
And also there's like stuff happening in Derry. There's like all the evil infection is spread everywhere. So I think there's like lots more bad stuff going on. So they all get flushed out into the same. They go to the cliff, don't they? And they jump into the water again, like last time.
Yeah. So obviously they're reminiscing about when they were younger. They finally beat Pennywise, but they've lost another of the losers. Ben and Bev jump in the water. They have a little kiss underwater.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how good that would be. Yeah.
Yeah, you get all the water in your mouth as well, wouldn't you?
It's one more.
Richie returns to the bridge where obviously there's some initials carved in, and it's him and Eddie. So were you meant to believe here, obviously from what you said, that they kind of loved each other, or were they just such good mates?
No. So Richie loved Eddie. This is the way I took it. Richie loved Eddie, but he never told Eddie. So and at the end, he's scratching in because before when he was a kid, he wrote R hearts, but never put the E. It's only after he's died that he goes back and puts the E in.
Okay. Always fall in love, always commit, realizing you love someone and they've just died.
Too late, isn't it? They all sort of go back to the day to day. So it ends with Bill getting a call from Mike and he says, I'm going to go to Florida. Everything's all right now. It's changed in the. I do feel like they missed a trick because in the book, I know we constantly say it's not the same as the book, but in the book, as they put the phone down, they know that they're starting to forget again. And I think as he puts the phone down, he's like, he can't remember who he was on the phone to just then. And it's the whole idea is that sort of anyone could have fought and beat a demonic monster in their hometown in their childhood and would have just forgotten about it. As they've grown older, they would have just sort of grown past that and sort of...
So we might have done it, mate.
Exactly, yeah. But that's like the kind of a brilliant thing about the book. I kind of feel like I got a bit lost here.
Yeah, that's good. And obviously they all receive letters from Stanley as well, basically explaining the reason he killed. From Stanley, he says, "I'm gonna Excelsior, true believer. I'm gonna make a great comic book out of this creature.
Spider-Man will return.
Spider-Man will return." And they go, "Oh, thank God."
Yeah.
So basically, he explains that he would have held them back, but he knew. They could defeat it basically without him if he took himself off the board.
That's lame.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
He says, like, I killed myself and I took myself off the board. So it wasn't like I just didn't go. I didn't turn up.
That's lame. I think he should have died because he was too scared. That's the whole point.
It's like a lame excuse. Why couldn't you come? Why couldn't you come?
I knew you would have been better at football if it wasn't on the team.
Why didn't you come? You said you're going to come. I didn't come because I was dead. That's the best reason.
Yeah.
All right.
I knew you were going to do better laser tag if I wasn't there on the team, shooting at the wrong bits. Yeah, there's a lame excuse. Yeah. What a letdown. Okay, so I've got some trivia. It's quite hard to find trivia. Weirdly, it's quite hard to find trivia for this film. Number one, which of the actors in the Losers Club used to actually be a clown?
You don't say that.
No. You get another go. Why not?
Whoever it was who played Richie. No, whoever it was who played Eddie. I was getting those two confused.
No, it wasn't. Eddie. It was Jay Ryan, the guy who played Ben Hanscom.
Oh, I knew it. He got a look about him, didn't he? I used to be a clone.
Number two. Mate, so how bad are trivia websites? I was trying to find trivia to put in this. And sometimes I'll go around the trivia websites to see if there's anything good. I went on one to look at some trivia, and it was like 27 interesting facts about the novel and the film. Number one, the story follows the exploits of seven children as they are terrorized by an eponymous being, which exploits the fear and phobias of its victims in order to disguise itself while hunting its prey. That's not trivia. That's just like a fact in the film.
That's just like a bloody part of the book. That's just like an overview.
Ben's going to get that right away. Ben's going to get that straight away. I'm not kind of asking
it.
And another one, number two in that list was, it primarily appears in the form of a clown. I'm like, no, he's going to get that one. He's definitely going to get that one. So the question was, mate, how bad are trivia websites?
They're pretty bad. You know?
Correct.
I usually go to IMDb, but then they're a bit obvious, aren't they?
This one, yeah, they're too obvious, yeah. Number three. I could tell you the budget of It Chapter 1 was $35 million, but can you tell me what the budget of It Chapter 2 was?
$35 million. Let's double it. Let's double it and add five. $75
million. Mate, it's really close. It's $60 to $79
million.
So, I don't know why it's... there's a variable
there. Is
that there,
just because you've got to pay the actors? And it's long. I mean, is this the longest horror film?
No, I don't mean that's true.
Apart from like, is it the long? Right, it's definitely like the biggest.
One of the biggest, like ones.
The biggest budget blockbuster horror films, right? I mean, what else compares to this, really? Like the last 10 years, for example. Like it's got to be a sequel to something. So like one of the Conjuring or the Insidious sequels, or a Saw sequel. I don't know. I mean, it's not. This feels like an event, you know? It felt like an event.
Avengers-style event, but like, no.
Yeah.
It's not quite as big. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, do you think it's good? It's good for horror, isn't it? I mean, if we're going to get, you know, maybe The Stand next.
Tell you what, the trailer for Dr. Sleep at the start of this film.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, that looks quite good, actually.
The trailer for Dr. Sleep, I think we saw it. So I saw it in the cinema before it actually dropped online, which was nice. Because I hadn't seen that before, and I thought it looked great. Again, another book which I've read where, like, the way I've pictured it is almost exactly how it was coming together there.
Did it really? So I've not read the book, but so this film looks like it's going to have a lot of The Shining film stuff in it. Was that?
And I think not so much in the book, but at the same time, everything that wasn't The Shining stuff. Obviously, this is like an ode to The Shining, really, isn't it? I think they need to sort of present it as that because everyone that he knows.
Okay, so number four. In an interview in July 2017, the child actors from the film, first film, were asked which actors they would choose to play them in the sequel. Two of them were correct with who ended up getting cast. Can you say which two were correct?
Well, I'm assuming the biggest names, because you won't just name some run. So I'm assuming James McAvoy and Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain was one of them. Sophia Lillis said she wanted Jessica Chastain. Finn Wolfhard was the other one who suggested Bill Hader.
Oh, Bill Hader. Okay, yeah. It's got to be known actor. I'm sure the kid who played Mike would have gone, that bloody bloke had an Old Spice.
There's
actor.
A guy who used to be a clown before he was an actor.
Yeah.
I think he'd be great.
And get him. Get him. He used to be a clown.
Yeah, the Old Spice guy as well. So, last one. Which actress appears in both films playing different characters?
It was Eddie's mum, Eddie's mum was the same actress as playing his wife, and I noticed that immediately. I don't know what her name is.
Molly Atkinson plays Myra Kasprak, Eddie's wife, as well as Sonia.
I went like this. This is what I did. I saw it. I went, that's the same actress as playing his wife, and someone went, shut up.
There's a few things. Like the chemist, I was like, I'm pretty sure that's the same guy from the first one, but it's been so long since I've seen the first one, I can't remember.
It's definitely the same guy from the first one, and there's also his daughter, or whatever she is, grown up, still chewing a bloody chewing gum. Bad for your teeth.
Cool little detail. It makes Derry kind of feel like a real place when they have stuff like that. Yeah, that's it, man.
Yeah!
I think you got them all sort of right. Well done.
Thank you.
And we need to rate the film. I forgot. I haven't even thought about this. I don't know what I'm going to go with.
I can't remember what I gave it, chapter one, But it didn't feel like it as much of a well-rounded experience as Chapter 1 did. Again, it felt like they were going over old ground, but I still did really enjoy it. And I think it's just because we got more of these characters and more Pennywise. So I felt, even though it didn't feel perhaps as well-rounded as it could have done, I still enjoyed it for what it was. Yeah. So I'd probably give it like a B.
Older, but not penny wiser, you could say. I think I was quite keen on the first. I think I must have given it an A or something. A minus, probably, something like that. This one, not so much. I thought it was a lot of fun. You're right, but you don't get films like this. Massive horror blockbuster event film. And it did it really well. I mean, I enjoyed it. I just think they should have gone to other places. They should have maybe scrapped that ending from the book completely and done something quite different, because you can't do the same thing again. But there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, I need to rate it. I haven't rated it. C+.
So what are you giving it?
A B minus. B minus. It's got to be B
minus. Okay. Yeah. I can deal with that. I think that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah. So next week we're doing Scary Stories.
Yeah. So we've been trying to do a lot of the newer releases, and we're trying to keep on top of it. There's been a lot lately, which is nice. So Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Look forward to it. And then I think maybe Invasion of the Body Snatchers, or maybe do an older one or something.
So I think, well, we've got Ready or Not not long after that as well, so we might have to do that before.
Yeah.
Shit in the bed.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good stuff coming out at the minute. It's good. Okay. Yeah. So the show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Camera for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners and the people on the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. And thanks to my co-host Ben for being all right or a dude.
Thank you, Luke, as always.
Right. Bye.
Bye now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.